Sesame Street was built around a single breakthrough insight that if you can hold the attention of children, you can educate them. This may seem obvious, but it isn't. Many critics of television to this day argue that what's dangerous about TV is that it is addictive, that children and even adults watch it like zombies. According to this view, it's the formal features of television, violence, bright lights, loud and funny noises, quick editing cuts, zooming in and out, exaggerated action, and all the other things we associate with commercial TV that hold our attention. In other words, we don't have to understand what we're looking at or absorb what we're seeing in order to keep watching. That's what many people mean when they say television is passive. We watch it when we're stimulated by all the whizzes and bangs of the medium, and we look away or turn the channel when we're bored. What the pioneering television researchers of the 1960s and 1970s, in particular Daniel Anderson at the University of Massachusetts, began to realize, however, is that this isn't how preschoolers watch TV at all. The idea was that kids would sit, stare at the screen, and zone out, said Elizabeth Lorch, a psychologist at Amherst College. But once we began to look carefully at what children were doing, we found out that short looks were actually more common. There was much more variation. Children didn't just sit and stare. They would divide their attention between a couple of different activities. And they weren't being random. They were predictable influences on what made them look back at the screen. And these were not trivial things, not just flash and dash. Lorch, for instance, once re-edited an episode of Sesame Street so that certain key scenes of some of the sketches were out of order. If kids were only interested in flash and dash, that shouldn't have made a difference. The show, after all, still had songs and Muppets and bright colors and action and all the things that make Sesame Street so wonderful. But it did make a difference. The kids stopped watching. If they couldn't make sense of what they were looking at, they weren't going to look at it. In another experiment, Lorch and Anderson showed two groups of five-year-olds an episode of Sesame Street. The kids in the second group, however, were put in a room with lots of very attractive toys on the floor. As you would expect, the kids in the room without the toys watched the show about 87% of the time, while the kids with the toys watched only about 47% of the show. Kids are distracted by toys. But when they tested the two groups to see how much of the show the children remembered and understood, the scores were exactly the same. This result stunned the two researchers. Kids, they realized, were an awful lot more sophisticated in the way they watched than had been imagined. They wrote, "We were led to the conclusion that the five-year-olds in the toys group were attending quite strategically, distributing their attention between toy play and viewing, so that they looked at what for them were the most informative parts of the program. This strategy was so effective that the children could gain no more from increased attention." If you take these two studies together, the toy study and the editing study, you reach quite a radical conclusion about children and television. Kids don't watch when they're stimulated and look away when they're bored. They watch when they understand and look away when they are confused. If you're in the business of educational television, this is a critical difference. It means that if you want to know whether and what kids are learning from a TV show, all you have to do is notice what they're watching. And if you want to know what kids aren't learning, all you have to do is notice what they aren't watching. Preschoolers are so sophisticated in their viewing behavior, in other words, that you can determine the stickiness of children's programming by simple observation.